The last part of Leviticus, starting this Shabbat, we're going to start in Numbers. And I've been looking at that all week, just looking at Numbers and how important it's going to be. So what we have in Leviticus, what we've seen, is God's, let me kind of take you through the scenario. There was never an intention for God to use the Torah to redeem Israel. Why was that? You ever wondered about why was he not using it to redeem them? Because he redeemed them. He redeemed them. He's the one that redeemed them in the Passover, in the first feast. He redeemed them when he asked them to kill the lamb, put the blood on the doorpost. He redeemed them and took them out of slavery. Now, once he took them out, the first thing he did, he removed them from where they had been for a long time. And that's a slave into iniquity and sin and trespassing. And so when he removed them, then he had to deliver what it meant about his set apartness and what it would take for them to be set apart. That was a whole book of Leviticus. We've seen that throughout Leviticus. He's explaining these different scenarios of what had to happen and what basically what it boiled down to. He showed them about these rituals that they had to perform in order to be set apart. And I think one of the things that is disturbs a lot of people is the fact that they were ritually set. Like it was a set of different things they had to do in order for them to be set apart. And in our society today, we're not about rituals. We're about just, it's done for us in Christ. And so we don't even go and study why he had these rituals for them to do. Why he said, do this, and do that. Can you imagine? You know, we sing songs about the blood of Yeshua and what it did to pay the price, but we say them in words, but we don't get the meaning of it. Why we don't get the meaning? Because we hadn't studied the ritual. Can you imagine that if we could get the picture of what it was like when we're singing songs about the blood that Yeshua bled for us, if you could imagine that while you was doing that song's being sung, you're dragging behind you a half-ton bull, and then you take him to the altar, you tie him off on one of the horns of the altar, and then you slit his throat. Unless you know the ritual behind what Yeshua actually paid for, it's hard for us to get the feeling behind what God's trying to show us that it cost in order for us to be redeemed. Now we know that ultimately, who redeemed us? We know that Yeshua did. He redeemed us. But there was a cost for that redemption. It wasn't free. It cost him his life. And I think we lose sight of that. We lose sight of what it really cost. In Leviticus, it paints out the cost. It paints out the rituals, the ceremonies that had to be performed in order for people to be set apart, to even remotely be in his presence. Then we move on to Numbers, which Numbers now is the performance of those things we learned in Leviticus. It's all about performance. Now, it's going to be difficult for me not to talk a little bit about Numbers, because I've been looking at Numbers all week. Numbers is a Greek transliteration of the Hebrew word Bamidbar. Numbers don't tell us nothing about the book. And the reason it's named Numbers is because there's a census, there's a tally. And because there's a tally of the people and then of the Levites, in the Greek mind, they said, well, this book, we'll just translate it to be Numbers. But the book of Numbers has no depth to it when you look at it as a word. But Bamidbar, it speaks about in the wilderness. In the wilderness. Now we have something attached to. This is what happened in the wilderness, the whole book. Now the performance has to happen on what they learned in Leviticus. So we've been told what we have to do in order to be in his presence. We were told what we do have to be accepted as a worshiper. You couldn't just worship God any kind of way. You couldn't come before him and present yourself any kind of way. There were certain rituals that you could be, you could become ritually impure. We learned that in Leviticus. And so even though there's a ritual for us to perform, if we were ritually impure, he had something else you had to do in order to get back in right standings with him. And in Numbers, we're going to find out. So think about this. We have the Exodus happens, and then the whole book of Leviticus, from a time frame, there's a lot going on. We think that it's a long period of time that happened, but it's not. It's a very short period. So within a year's time, all of that was delivered to them. Now they're going to start journeying. We're going to see that as the Numbers. They're going to start their journey. And when they start their journey, you have to think about this. I want you to think about a lifetime of living apart from God, and all of a sudden you come to know God. How much stuff you think you still, by way of bad habits, you would have after 1 year? Or do you think you'd have it all cleaned up and it'd be ready to go? We're going to soon find out that the children of Israel had a lot of stuff on them that they couldn't shake. Not to mention, they were a mixed group of people who had, there were people that was with Israel, who married into Israel, who had their roots planted deep in a mixed culture, in a mixed way of serving other gods. And we see that being brought in over periods of time. We see it brought in. That's why God had to hold them in this wilderness experience for so long. And we'll soon find out that many of them died off. That generation that wouldn't take the book of Leviticus and actually put it into full practice like they needed to. Now, there were some that did, but it wasn't, there wasn't everyone that really believed it. And thank God that he can work with just a few. If it's just a few, it's okay. If you feel like you're the only one doing it, it's okay. If you're the only one in your family, it's okay. Because that's what God's the master at. He can take what seems to be a failing, seems to be something that's not accomplishing anything. He can take what seems to be failing and turn it around to be something that is superior to anything out there. And that's exactly what he's going to do in the end time. Because it's going to look like, on all accounts, that God's people lost. It's going to look like that. It's going to look like that when all the weapons of war are turned against Israel. And it don't look like there's any hope for them at all. And then God's going to stop it. He's going to turn it around for their good. Why? Because he has a covenant. He has a promise. And it only takes one person, only one, to be true to the covenant agreement they made with God, and he'll fix it for them. Only one. And so never feel like you're in this thing and you don't have a lot of support or whatever. If you're by yourself, you can rest assured that God's going to stand true to his covenant promise. So think about this. He took them out of this slavery. They were for over 400 years. They had learned these customs. They had grown accustomed to these customs. They had practiced these customs that were completely against what God wanted them to do. So what he did, he started them right away in to rewrite their understanding. When he got to Mount Sinai, he delivers the message in Leviticus. The message is delivered to them. And in that message, he delivers what it takes for their life in order for them to be set apart before Yehovah. And now in Numbers, which will start on Friday, they're going to have to be ready to perform what had happened. If there's no performance, the consequences will be shown, and it's going to be devastating consequences. We'll find out soon. And so we see that when he's talking about there's a way that seems right to man, but the end of that is death. But he says he's the way, the truth, and the life. That's what Yeshua said. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And one of the scriptures that I was made to remember was the one in 1 Corinthians 13, where it starts there in verse, in my opinion, it starts in that third 12th verse, chapter in verse 31, when it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 31, but earnestly seek the better gifts, and yet I show you a more excellent way. I show you a more excellent way. How many want to know what the excellent way is that he's showing us? Well, he showed them that in Leviticus. This is the excellent way. Now you got to go perform this excellent way. And we're going to see that the things that happen in Numbers is their lack of performing in this most excellent way. Because there's one thing about God, he's not going to lower his standard in order to come down and hang out with us because we can't ever reach that, what he had set. He sets the bar. We don't set the bar. He set the bar. And with him setting the bar, we see that there was one who came that attained that bar that he set, and that was Yeshua. And then those who follow Yeshua, we'd have reached that bar. We're not to lower the bar as time goes on and make excuses. Well, let's lower the notch because this generation is just different. They're a little weaker. Let's lower the bar. If you do that, what happens over time? You lower the bar, you lower the bar, you lower the bar. Then before you know it, what used to be bad is now good. What used to be wrong is now right. Why? Because you lowered the bar. And so we see that in Yehovah, he never lowered the bar. He didn't lower it for Yeshua. Nor did Yeshua lower it for his disciples. He didn't lower it for the 12 apostles. And what makes us think now that we get this claim that we're the Christian church, that we can lower the bar? People have lowered the bar since Yeshua died on the cross. They've been lowering the bar ever since. And that's the standard we live in the world today. We live in a different America than in 1776. It's different. The bar has been lowered many times. There's been so many amendments to the Constitution. You know, when you make amendment after amendment to the Constitution, you know what you're doing? You're lowering the Constitution. Well, what was Leviticus? This was God's Constitution. And how are you going to live for this Most High Elohim? This is the Constitution that God wrote. Now, it was different. You know why it was different? It wasn't written by man. It was written by God. So it was different. There's no doubt about it. It was a different constitution. Yet, if we're going to join in his family, we have to abide by his constitution. We can't say, well, I want a different constitution. Well, he's not going to allow us to come in and make a mockery of his family. And so we're included in the family if we want to be, but we're going to have to definitely do it in this most excellent way. And in 1 Corinthians, we learn some things about the most excellent way. And one of the first things we learn is love. Love is, number one, it's patient. Love is patient. And we learn that this word patient is very interesting because it means to be patient, have patience, not lose heart, to perverse, persevere patiently, bravely in enduring trials and troublesome times, being patient in bearing in offenses and injuries of others, slow to anger, long-suffering. And this word comes from two Greek words. And the two Greek words that it comes from is makros, which is G3117, which means long, far, and distance. And thumos, which is 2372, which means passion, angry, tempers, fierce, wrath, outburst of anger. We are certainly able to see from this definition how patient Yehovah is with mankind. There's no doubt about it. So this love that it talks about in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 13, is dealing with this explanation of this most excellent way that he's speaking of. It's the most excellent way, and he's dealing with those principles. And so what we see in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9. You can go there. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9. It says, Yehovah is not slow in regards to the promise, as some count slowness, but is patient toward us. He's patient toward us. Why am I saying this tonight? Because I want you to see that the writer of the Constitution also lives by the Constitution. He lives by what he wrote to us. He's not going to give himself a different standard than he gave us to live by. And so he's telling us that Yehovah is not slow in regards to the promise, as some count slowness, but is patient toward us. Why is he patient toward us? It's not that he's slow in reacting. If he reacted now, many of us would not make it. He's being patient with us for us to figure it out and get it together. Can you imagine if he'd acted 10 years ago or 15 years ago? Think about that. He didn't do it. Why? Because he's patient toward us. He cares about us. So with this same that we're talking about, the way, this most excellent way, not just any way, a most excellent way, that this Yehovah that we serve, the Most High God, he's not slow in regards to the promise, as some count slowness, but is patient toward us, not wishing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Thank God that he's being patient towards us, because there's definitely been enough sinning to make God respond to the sinning. There's no doubt about it. There's been enough iniquity in the world to make God respond to the iniquity. But he's not slow concerning his promise, but he's being patient to allow people to get it together and come into repentance, that we can join into this most excellent way. How many thank God for that? In James chapter 5, verse 7, it says, so brothers, be patient until the coming of the Master. See, the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth. Wait patiently for it until it receives the early and latter rain. You too be patient. Establish your heart, for the coming of the Master has drawn near. So don't get weary in well-doing. For in due season you'll reap if you faint not. Now he says the farmer does what? He waits patiently when he puts the seed in the ground. Some of you planted a garden this year. You put the seed in the ground. You don't go back in 2 weeks and say, well, nothing's happening. You just mow right over and till over it. You got to be patient. Before you know it, the green starts coming. And then before you know it, on the green, there's a bud, there's a flower. And before you know it, then the fruit comes. But you have to be patient in order for that to happen. And that's how he looks at our life. Sometimes, and you never know what stage a person's in. Maybe you were planted a month before they were planted. So their stage is different than your stage. So when you're handling people, you got to take all that in consideration. You have to consider when you're handling people that maybe they're in the most delicate stage is when they're in the flowering stage. If anything happens when it's in the flower stage, any kind of chemical change, any kind of soil change, any too much water, it drops the flower too soon before the fruit can come on the vine. We have to be so careful. So there's times that God is being careful with us because he knows we're in a delicate stage and he's being tender with us. We have to learn that same thing. We have to reciprocate that to other people. You never know what stage a person's in. Especially if it's a person you don't know, you just meet them. You have no idea what stage they're in. That's why you got to be prayed up. You got to be sensitive to the things of God. It's not you getting ready for something. You got to be ready every day. You're not getting ready for a day. You got to be ready every day. This should be important to our life. And so we see this in James, the power that's there when he says, so brothers, be patient until the coming of the Master. See, the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until he receives the early and the latter rain. Why you need both rains? Because if you wait till the latter rain, you can pick it whenever you want. But if you wait till the latter rain, it's really going to pop and be sweet. It's really going to give you the nutrients that you need because you waited for both. But if you want to pick it, go ahead and pick it whenever you want, because sometimes you can't tell people nothing. They're going to do what they want to do. Well, it looks right to me. That's okay. Go on. You know how many people has been picked before time? And some people, if you don't pick them, they pick themselves. They'll just say, God said. It's dangerous. Wait for the latter rain. Wait for the word to go forth. Don't you think that if you're somewhere that God's not prepping and preparing just like tonight, wait for the word to go forth. Then you get the latter rain. Then you can make a sound, clear decision on what you need to do. But when you miss that word, you missed God. A Greek antonym for this word is adamandio, which is G85, which means to be faint, depressed, and almost overwhelmed with sorrow or burdens of mind, be in distress or distress. There are many today who are deeply depressed and are greatly overwhelmed by the trials they face, and in the process are unable to express true patience, love toward others and toward Elohim, which is revealed in their refusal to walk in the commands. You can't refuse to walk in the commands. When you have a knowledge of it and you constantly resist and refuse, it won't be long. You're going to make the worst mistake you've ever made in your life because you refuse to make an adjustment in your life. People who have difficulty, especially here in this church, I can tell you the issue is when they won't adjust in their life to be obedient to the commands of Yehovah. And so then they get sideways with God, and then eventually sideways with people. And before you know it, I'm going to do something else. Why is that? You have to understand. He's being patient with us, and he's telling us, I don't want you to make these decisions, but you go on and make the ones you want. It's up to you. You make the ones you want. But he's expressing to us that we have to not allow ourselves to get, because what it leads to is depressed. You get depressed about it. You shouldn't be depressed over the word of God. You shouldn't be depressed over your relationship with God. And remember, nobody puts you in depression. You chose depression. You did. All because you couldn't get a hold to love is patient. It waits. It waits when it can't explain it. It just waits because you know the love that you have for God and the love that God has for you. You're going to just be patient. You're going to wait. God's going to do what he's going to do, and then the outcome is going to be greater than you could ever imagine. The next thing that he said, love is kind. The Greek word for kind is Christoume, which is Strong's 5541, which means to be kind, show oneself mild, or show kindness. It comes from the Greek word Christos, which is G5543, which means serviceable, goods, useful, upright. This word is used in the LX Septuagint translation of the Tanakh, or the Old Testament, in Proverbs 2, verse 21. Listen to this verse. We had it last week. For the straight shall dwell in the earth, and the perfect be left in it. The word straight is this word in the Greek, this Christos, the straight. So the use of the word straight, which is in the Hebrew, is the word yashar. It's Strong's 3477, which means right, straight, upright, and righteous. We as children of Elohim are called to walk upright and straight. We are to walk upright and straight. Called to walk and do what is right in the eyes of Yehovah. What's right in the eyes of Yehovah? His constitution. That's what's right now. Not some man's constitution. That's why Yehovah rejected, through Yeshua's words, the oral law. That's why he rejected it. You went under man's traditions. I reject that. He said, unless your righteousness exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you're not even going to enter in. Why? Because their righteousness was based upon lower the bar, and we feel like you only got to do this. And they passed it on from one generation to the next. The scripture says that all that Yehovah spoke to Moshe, he wrote it down and he gave it to us. We have it in writing. So these extra writings that comes along the way, they're troublesome to a lot of people. And we have to be careful. We as children of Elohim are called to walk upright and straight, called to walk and do what is right in the eyes of Yehovah. What's right in the eyes of Yehovah? His constitution. That's what's right. Nothing else. Not my constitution. Not the way I feel. Not what I think. His constitution is right in his eyes. Called to do what is yashar. Called to walk in righteousness. And that is to walk in his Torah. Think about this. I was cutting grass today. And as I was cutting grass, I was just meditating on the book of Numbers. Because I'm getting ready for Friday. So I'm meditating on Numbers. I wasn't meditating on this. I meditated on all this last week. And I just had to put it in a compartment because I got to move on because we got Shabbat's coming. So I got to prepare for Shabbat. And so I'm meditating on Numbers. And yet Yehovah is reminding me about Yeshua. He reminded me about Yeshua. When you go through Numbers, you'll find out that this spiritual rock talks about these spiritual things, the spiritual bread, the spiritual rock. In Numbers, it has terminology like that. And that rock was Yeshua. It's spoken of that way in the renewed writings. And so I'm trying to gather my thoughts on this. And that's why he's called the living Torah. He is the manifested constitution made alive in front of us. They had him but didn't recognize him. Therefore they wandered in the Midbar for a long time until they died off. Those generations died off because they couldn't see him. They couldn't see the hand of Yehovah. There were times, there were moments, and there were miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle. Yet they couldn't embrace him to commit their lives fully to him. You know, are you fully committed? Are you fully committed to the life that Yeshua gave at Calvary? Are you fully committed to that life? Are we fully committed now that we have the manifested presence of Yehovah in our midst, in his son Yeshua? Are we committed to the life he lived? Think about it. I dare say sometimes we struggle with our commitment. We got words. Our words say we are, but our heart is far from him. We have a form of godliness, but we deny the power thereof. We have to make sure that we grab hold to these principles and they become something that's important to our life, and we reflect that in our everyday living. In Devarim chapter 12, verse 28 says this: guard and obey these words which I command you, that it might be well with you and your children after you forever, when you do what is good and right in the eyes of Yehovah, your Elohim. You got to do what's good and right. What's good and right in the eyes of Elohim? His constitution. It's his constitution, not man's. His constitution. So you know what we do? Just to lower the bar as much as we can, what we create is religion. We create denominations. In our denomination, we do our statement of faith. And whatever our statement of faith, we find the verses that fits with our belief system. We lower the bar and we bypass the constitution of Yehovah. And we say, we're this denomination. We're this group of people. We got our own constitution. That's what people have done for millennia. They've written their own way, their own path, their own route in order to get into his reign or his kingdom. But how are you going to get there when Yeshua said they're going to be some who's going to come and they're going to plead their case? Haven't we did this in your name? Have we done this in your name? And they're going to present their what their belief system was, and he's going to say, depart from me, ye that work lawlessness. I don't know you. I don't know who you are. Because the constitution I followed, you followed a different constitution. See, the United States has a constitution. We have a constitution. There's certain rules in this constitution that have been amended over the years. And there are some that they want to completely do away with. They want to do away with some of the constitutions. They want to do completely away with them. When you start changing your founding documents that caused the nation to be so blessed to explode in as many years as we've been a nation to the extent we are now, you start doing away with that Constitution, what happens to the nation? It changes. It changes big time. And all you got to do is have the right president and the right Congress and the right Senate, and before you know it, your Constitution as you knew it is over with. It's done. It's no more good. It's no different than God's Constitution. You can't keep translating God's Constitution till it makes no sense, that you don't even think you got to abide by anything where the Constitution's written, which is left to Matthew. When you get to that point that you say the Old Testament is done away with, the fact that you use the term old is pretty incredible. Because it's not in the Scripture. It's just a term to title something. And you're going to give it old because it's something that's been done, it's over with, it has no meaning whatsoever in today's society. I want to tell you, that is the craziest talk I've ever heard. Yet it comes from some of the most leading Christian evangelicals in the country today. This is the stuff that is spoken. It has no bearing on us today. We talking about the Constitution of God? Has no bearing on us today? What kind of church are we? Do you see what he's telling us here? He keeps reminding us. In Deuteronomy, he says again, I'm going to read it to you again. Guard and obey all these words I command you, that it might be well with you and your children after you forever. He's showing that it's generational. This never ends. It's generational. And when you do what is good and right in the eyes of Yehovah your Elohim, I encourage you to go back and check out the Torah commentary notes on Deuteronomy chapter 3 through 7 for a more deeper understanding on what Yeshua is. Now, we'll have that, but it'll be a while before we get back to Deuteronomy. So you can go back and check it. It should be in some of your notes. In this letter to the assembly in Corinth, Shaul was making it clear that being kind emphasizes the upright expression of love as seen in being upright, and upright, good and functional, according to the word of Elohim. So when you're kind, you're being upright, good and functional. You're actually being functional to the point. Now remember, we learned this in Bereshit when we studied Bereshit. That quick, the Lord reminded me of Bereshit just now. In Bereshit, when he says he saw that it was good, it's different than the good that we have. Our good is whatever's pleasing to us, we think it's good. Whatever tastes good is good. So it all has to do with how it makes me feel, and we believe that's good. Now, I could be good to somebody else and not be good to you. How many of you ever tasted something, and they say, man, you ever tasted this? This is the best thing. It's good. You taste and go, are you kidding me? See, there's different perspectives there, because good is based upon taste. That's not what good, you know, and so we take that in our definitions of good for everything. How the song makes you feel don't make the other person feel. So you say, man, it's a good song. The other person listens to it. I ain't listening to that. Because it's all about feelings. It's about our feeling, what it does for us. We take all those definitions, and they're really bad definitions of what we call good, and we try to use that same when we read good in the Bible. We think it applies the same way. Well, it's good if it makes me feel right. It's good if I taste good. It's good if it's appealing to my eyes. God created, it's only good if it functions for what he created it to do. That's what he calls good. It's actually functioning to what he created to do. When he said, let there be light, and if the light wasn't shining, you think he'd have called that good? It's not functioning. We've got to start over. It had to function for what the intended creation was for. And so man was created to be in God's presence continually, to never be out of his presence. Man was created to worship his creator. And then all of a sudden, man come out of that function, and he wasn't good no more. He had to put him out of the garden. He wasn't good for the created purpose. Does that make sense to everybody? See, he's trying to get us back to be good for the created purpose. And to be good, you got to understand love is patient. Love is kind. What does kind mean? It means to be upright, functional, and operating in the perspective that Jehovah intended you to operate in. Kind, you might say, well, I'm being kind to that person. Another person might think you're not being kind. We use everyday definitions and apply them to scriptural words, and it's just not the case. It's not the case at all. That's why we don't never arrive to the part he wants us to arrive to, because we never go further than that. We think our English definitions for every word is the Bible. And it's so far from the Bible, it's not even funny. So I'm not using my English definition of understanding of these things when I read a word like good. I'm going a little bit deeper because I'm looking at, is it upright, good, and functional? Is it functioning to its created purpose? That's important. It should be important to all of our life. Number three, love does not envy. Love does not envy. The Greek word for envy is zeloo, which is Strong's G2206, meaning to be jealous, envious, desire earnestly. It comes from the Greek word zelos. Strong's 2205, meaning zeal, jealousy, fury, which is from the word zeo, which is Strong's 2204, which means to be hot, boil, or fervent. The Hebrew equivalent of this word is the word kana. Kana is 87065, means to be jealous or zealous, be envious or be ardent. And both the Greek and Hebrew can be expressed as a positive or a negative action. What Shaul is referring to here is that the true love cannot be expressed in a negative application of this word. True love cannot be expressed in a negative application of this word. A couple examples. Proverbs 23, verse 17. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be in the fear of Yehovah all day long. How do you envy sinners? It's almost like this doesn't make sense. But how many know the heart envies sinners sometimes? Meaning those who are not following the Constitution, yet they seem to be prospering. And you go along instead of following the Constitution to gain your prosperity, start doing what they're doing. That's your heart being envy of sinners. He said, don't do that. Because be in the fear of Yehovah all day long. Don't be sidetracked by what you see. And it happens to people. You're going along, especially people, you're starting business. You're starting business, and you're starting business under the constitutional premise of Yehovah, and another person starts a business doing it their way. And all of a sudden, their business explodes, and yours is kind of creeping along really slow. And you go, man, I'll start doing what they're doing. Go on. You won't be serving Yehovah very long, I can tell you that. You can't look at what other people's doing. You got to keep your mind, you got to fear Yehovah all day long. Let me tell you, it looks like you're not going nowhere, but once you get there, it's solid. It's rock solid. You don't have to worry about anything. And I can tell you by experience, that's the way you do it. You got to keep your heart fearing Yehovah all day long. Don't look to the right. Don't look to the left. Don't look at what they're doing. Follow his constitution and watch him do what he does. It takes a lot longer, but by now you should have learned patience. When you learn these steps that he laid out for us, beautiful. Where'd he get all this? From the constitution. That's where he got it from. When you do it his way, it's beautiful in the end. And what he does, listen, there's nothing more unexplainable than when you get to live in a house you didn't build, eat from a vineyard you didn't plant. And the only way to get there is to do what God said, His way. It don't make sense. You go, man, I didn't work for this. How did I get here? How did all this stuff start happening? Because you got to fear Yehovah all day long, every day. You never take your eyes off of Him. Don't be envious of sinners. What's a sinner? Simply a person who don't follow God's constitution. That can be a person that sits next to you in the service. That can be a person who you work with. It can be a person that goes, attends anywhere. It has nothing to do with where you attend. If you don't follow His constitution, he deems you a sinner. Why? Because you're a lawbreaker. James 3:16. For where jealousy and self-seeking are, there is confusion in every foul deed. Where jealousy, what's the word that we learn? And when we look at the Greek word of envy, what's one of the definitions? Jealousy. For where jealousy and self-seeking are, there is confusion in every foul deed. You don't want to get wrapped up in it. Don't be. Why would you be jealous of what somebody else is doing when you got your eyes on Yehovah? In Yehovah, sometimes you think, well, He's not going fast enough. He's God. He can do it tomorrow. Yeah, He can do it tomorrow. But what are you going to learn if He did it by tomorrow? What are you going to learn? Have you learned anything? But if it took a month, in that month's time, you learn to fall more in love with Him and to count on Him more, to relax in Him more. You learn to trust in Him more. And then He done it for you. And so, you know, you think about Abraham. He told Abraham, he says, I'm going to give you a seed, and your seed's going to be, look at the stars. You know, he goes through all of this process, but he didn't give it to him right away. He made him wait. He learned all this constitutional living. Abraham did. How do we know he learned it? Because in the end, he got it. That's how we know he did. He had to be patient. He had to be kind. And we see all of these attributes in the life of Abraham. These were the characters. What's the characteristics we see in Yeshua? Same ones. We see Him in His life. If anybody knew how to be patient, it was Yeshua. If anybody knew what kind, how to be kind, it was Yeshua, because He was one who walked upright. If anybody knew about being, not to envy, love doesn't envy. He knew about these things. And so we see in His life these wonderful principles. James chapter 4, verse 2. You desire and do not have. You murder and are jealous and unable to obtain. You strive and fight and you do not possess because you do not ask. What gets you out of sync with God is because the moment you allow the circumstance to overwhelm your mind, you get a little bit out of sync with God, and all of a sudden you're jealous for a different method, a different, faster way. I'm going to help God here. And you're unable to obtain it, even then. And you strive and fight, but you do not possess because you do not ask. Listen, if you're struggling with these things, you just ask Him. So, Lord, I'm struggling with these things. Can you help me? And He'll help you. Do you often find yourself being envious of another? Be it because of what possessions they have, or what gifts and talents or physical attributes they have? If you do, then, as Jacob says, you will find disorder in every evil practice. That's what James just said. You're going to find what you're going to find is disorder in every evil practice. It's not going to turn out good for you. Because that's not how you go about getting the blessing that God wants for you. You don't look at what somebody else has and you desire that when He's got something all packaged real good for you. But He's ready to give it to you the moment you learn what it takes to release that. The trust that you got to have, the faith that you got to put in Him, the fact that you can relax in Him, the fact that you give your all to Him, and He's just, you could be one moment away from the release of what He has special for you. We're not talking about getting somebody else's. You know, you can't call it custom if you're getting what somebody else did for themselves. That's not custom. Custom is what you designed. Custom is what God has for you. And He has something custom for you, especially for you. It's very important that you wait patiently for what God has for you, not what somebody else has. Love does not boast. Love does not boast. The Greek word for boast is perpiuime. Strong's 4068, which means to boast in oneself, self-display, vanity, excessive display of pride, especially in one's achievements. Brag to think highly of oneself. We are to boast in Yehovah and in His set-apart name, and not in self, which Shaul makes clear here. Do not boast, especially in self. Remember, any place you've ever gotten, you didn't get there on your own. Don't boast in yourself. Boast in the things that Yehovah has done. In Yirmiyahu chapter 9, verse 23 and 24 says, "Thus said Yehovah, let not the wise boast in his wisdom, let not the mighty boast in his might, nor let the rich boast in riches, but let him who boasts boast of this, that he understands and knows me, that I am Yehovah, doing kindness, right ruling, and righteousness in the earth, for in these I delight, declares Yehovah." If you're going to boast in anything, boast about Yehovah and his goodness. Boast about his constitution. Boast about how he set it all out. If we live the way he said to live, we're going to all wind up at the prize. Every one of us is going to make it if we live like he said to live. So don't boast in your accomplishments. Boast in Yehovah, that you know him, that you came to understand who he is. He says, let him who boasts boast in this, that he understands and knows me. How can we understand and know him if we don't read the Constitution that he wrote for us? How can you say you know him? When you get asked the constitutional question, you won't know what we're talking about. How many thank God you learned the Constitution of Yehovah? That way you can have a conversation with people. You want to help. You know, people talk about, well, I'd like to see my family saved. Really? When you don't even know the Constitution yourself, you really want to see them saved? I'd plug in and I'd get serious, and I'd get dedicated to understanding it myself. I start reading on my own, figuring out what it is that God said, and then you'll see the miracles start to happen in your family. If not, I guess you're okay with them not making it. See, we don't ever want to hear that. Why is that? Because we don't want the responsibility for it. We want it to be a reason for something. Listen, we want it to be the devil. So we give more power and more authority to the devil than we do to God. Listen, if we want to see the breakthrough, we got to be the light of the world, the salt of the earth. That's just that simple. That's what Yeshua said. These are basic principles that he taught, especially when he sat down and he gave commentary to God's constitution on the mount there. On the mount when he gave this famous message that we all read in Matthew 5, when he gave commentary to the constitution, he told us simply that. These are principles that are very easy to understand. Love is not puffed up. Love is not puffed up. The Greek word for puffed up is phoseo. Phoseo. Which is G5448, which means to inflate, blow up, cause to swell, make proud or arrogant. This is used in the renewed writings figuratively in describing pride and self-conceit. Those who disregard the need to walk upright in the clear Torah of Elohim are arrogant and proud and inflate themselves to an assumed position or height of safety, yet are simply puffed up in their own drunken arrogance. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4 says this, "See, he whose being is not upright, in him is puffed up. But the righteous one lives by his steadfastness." The Hebrew word for puffed up is afal. Afal is 860-75. It means to swell, be lifted up, presume, be heedless, and be proud. The assembly at Corinth were boasting and puffing themselves up in their tolerance of sin rather than dealing with it. We have an example of that in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. This is what he said, verse 1. It is commonly reported that there is whoring among you, and such whoring is not even named among the Gentiles, so as one to have his father's wife, and you have been puffed up. Let me see that word. You have been puffed up and did not rather mourn, so that he who has done these deeds be removed from among you. This was the church. This was the then known church. Those followers of Yeshua that Shaul's addressing here. Notice he's addressing them. He said, you got puffed up in your own arrogance. You thought, well, what Yeshua did for me is just going to take care of all of it. Really, if it took care of everything, why is Shaul addressing it? If it took care of it, why is Shaul saying what you're doing is wrong? They were an older version of the television series called The Days of Our Life. And we're quite puffed up about it too. This kind of tolerance shows no true love for Elohim. And we have it all the time happening. Well, we get tolerant for iniquity. We're just okay with it. It's just around you so much, it's not going to hurt anybody. Eventually, it'll destroy everybody. Is what's the real reason. It'll destroy everybody. It starts to undermine everything. All you got to do is have one leak. One leak. And before you know it, it'll start to undermine the whole foundation. Just one leak. It just leaks a little bit. It's not running water. It's just a drip. But you let it drip for a long period of time, and before you know it, you're going to have trouble. It'll start to undermine the foundation. It'll start to deteriorate a little bit at a time. And that's how the enemy works. It's not the obvious thing. It's the little bit at a time. It's the little things that eat up at the foundation. Before I know it, undermines it. And so we have to be careful that we're not allowing that to happen. Number 6, love does not behave indecently. The Greek word used for behaving decently is askomone. It's G807, which means behave unbecomingly, indecent, to behave in an ugly, indecent, unseemly, or becoming manner, to disgrace oneself, treat with contempt or dishonor. And you'd think these are not the behaviors of the church that he's addressing here, but yet that's who he's addressing. Not those who love Yeshua. They don't have these issues. Yet, that's what he's addressing. Why? How do we know that they're having these issues? Because they're failing to live up to the constitution in which Yehovah wrote. And so Shaul's pointing it out. This is the early church. He's pointing this out. If this was happening in the early church, I wonder what's happening in the church today. Today's church. Is people behaving indecently in today's world? You don't have to look too far today to see how so many behave in an ugly manner, and we must be on guard against any such behavior as we seek to love Elohim with all our heart and soul and strength. This word can also render the meaning of being rude, and this we are to guard against as we show respect to one another and are not rude toward each other. Number 7, love does not seek its own. The Greek word for seek is zeteo. Zeteo is G2212, which means seek for, desire, seek in order to find out by thinking, meditating, or reasoning, to strive after, demand. The Greek word used for own is heautu, which is Strong's 1438, which means himself, herself, or own estimation. What we see from this is that when we truly walk in love and guard to do the commands of Elohim and live set apart lives unto him, we are not to be found to be seeking our own way or desires. We are not to be spending our days meditating on what we wish for, nor are we to be to spend our time trying to reason out in our own mind how we can strive after the things that are not according to the desires of Elohim, but are simply fleshly desires that can often consume our thoughts and time. We are to meditate on and delight in the Torah of Elohim day and night, for then we will be prosperous in all our ways. Philippians chapter 2, verse 4. Each one should look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. Wow. You mean we're supposed to look out for each other? Under his constitution, we are. We learn that. We just went through that, how important that is. We learn that that's part of the constitution. If you can't look out for your brother, then he has an issue with that. Yet we become very independent in Christianity today. Philippians 2:21, for all seek their own interests, not those of Messiah Yeshua. For all seek their own interests, not those of Messiah Yeshua. Is this Messiah's constitution also? He's just telling us that. All seek their own interests, but not those of Messiah Yeshua. We seek the interest of everyone. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24, let no one seek his own, but each one that of the other. Let no one seek his own, but each that of the other. And I'm reminded of this 1 Corinthians 10, because in 1 Corinthians 10 is basically where Numbers is an address of what happens in the book of Numbers early on. And so I was going over that today. And so when I looked at this 1 Corinthians 10, I'm reminded of that. We'll have more of that on Friday. I could go right into it right now, but we might as well finish, right? Number 8, love is not provoked. Love is not provoked. The Greek word for provoked is paroxono, which is G3947, which means to sharpen, stimulate, provoke, to incite, arouse to anger. There are many today who simply just love to pick a fight and stir up an argument in order to try to prove that they are right and that they know better. This, of course, is not true love, no matter how much they love to do it. Gossip and slander are very powerful tools that are used in provoking people to anger, which we are to guard against at all costs, for we are to build one another up and not break down. Many think that it is just a form of joking around when provoking another in their weakness, and this we must not do. Proverbs 26, verse 18 and 19 says, like a madman who throws sparks, arrows, and death, so is a man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. It may be a joke to you, but to Yehovah it's no joke. Because Yehovah in his constitution says, don't behave that way. Don't put it off like you're just kidding, because it caused hurt to someone. And the person you're hurting, remember, Yehovah loves them. He loves them. You say, but they're not even saved. He loves them. He's still getting them through the process. They could be saved. And are you the one to hinder them to be saved? That's why he says we got to be careful how we treat the stranger, the foreigner. He gives us that in the Constitution. We don't get a license to act how you want. And I tell you what, in Numbers, we're going to learn something about the Nazarite. Now listen, don't get confused the term Nazarite with Nazareth or Nazarene. They're not the same. Nazareth is where Yeshua come from. A Nazarene was one who lived in Nazareth. A Nazarite, it can't be confused with neither one of them. A Nazarite would be about the Nazarite vow that he talked about in Scripture. A Nazarite could be a Gentile. A Nazarite could be a Gentile. A Nazarite was one who devoted his life to the service of Yehovah. And if he lived the Nazarite vow, Yehovah accepted him. And if he accepted him, who are we to disregard him? So it don't matter if it's not your brother. If they take a vow to Yehovah, we have to be careful, because even though, let me tell you how serious God is about this. We'll learn this in Numbers. A Nazarite, he was so serious about a Nazarite vow, you could only be a priest if you was from the tribe of what? Of Levi. You had to be from the tribe of Levi. If you wasn't born in the tribe of Levi, you would disqualify for being a priest, unless you made a Nazarite vow. You could even be a Gentile, and you can work in a court area. You couldn't be the high priest, but you could work in a court area and be a part of that clan if you took a Nazarite vow. That's how serious God is. And it doesn't matter if you're a Gentile, whatever group you're born to, it doesn't make a difference. Because once you make the Nazarite vow, you vow to Yehovah, he's going to hold you to it. Now, if you break that vow, it don't turn out good for you. Because God is opening himself up to you to come in. And guess what all of us had to do through Yeshua? We all have to take the Nazarite vow. We all vowed a vow to walk upright and do what he's asked us to do and be a follower of the same constitution that he followed. And if we take that and we break that vow in any kind of way, we're disqualified. That's why he said, many of you say, Lord, Lord, but I don't even know you. Because you're not living out the constitution. You work lawlessness. And so this is very important to Yehovah. The next thing, number 9, love reckons not the evil. The Greek word for reckons is logizomai. Logizomai is Strong's G3049, which means an account or reckoning, to consider, take account, think, occupy one's with calculations. And the word for evil is kakos. Kakos is Strong's 2556, which means evil, wicked, bad things, loathsome, and wrong. We are not to sit and recount in our mind all the bad and wicked things that are going on or have been done to us, for this will only stir up bitterness, fear, and resentment, and render one unable to bear the true fruit of righteousness expressed in loving commitment toward Elohim. What things do you consider and recount in your mind the good and functional way of Elohim as given through the Torah, or on the wicked and destructive patterns of a lawless world? So whatever you're thinking, that's why he says, he gives us this in Philippians. He talks about, my brothers, whatever things are true, just, lovely, pure, of good report, if there be any virtue of any praise, think on these things. Why? Because if you're not thinking on the proper things, then you give yourself over to an open field for the devil to come in and do whatever he wants. So when he's talking about don't reckon, love reckons not of evil, it's not constantly bringing up the wrong. Don't constantly do that. You got to bring up the right. You're supposed to dwell on the things that he sets forth in his Torah. This also teaches us that when we walk in true love, that we do not sit and recount everyone's wicked past and occupy ourselves with past feelings, failings. Often people relate their past wickedness and laugh and joke at things they did when we ought to be ashamed of our past sins, reckoning our lives as having been plucked from the fire. Because think about that. You were plucked from the fire. I was plucked from the fire. We don't go and laugh about being in the fire, do we? You know, yesterday on a boat, I had some kids that had never been fishing. And they caught a hardhead. And so the boy had the hardhead and he's holding it up like that. I said, I'm on the back fooling with another guy tying his line. I said, hold up, I'm coming. Well, he's got it dangling like that. And it falls on the floor. And the guy does like that, and he's about to kick it off the boat. And I said, don't kick that hardhead. And boy, he stopped like that, and I startled him. I said, I didn't mean to yell, but I'm telling you, if you'd have kicked that hardhead, you'd have created a memory you'd never forgot. You wouldn't have forgot it, because it would cause you so much pain, you'd have remembered it all the days of your life. We're not to look back at the things that cause so much pain in our life. You know it happened. Don't make it a funny. Don't make it something that you commonly talk about. You got it. When we can talk about where we are now, we can reflect on the good things that we are now. We're not in the fire no more. You don't want to talk about the fire. You were in the fire. He took you out of the fire. You don't talk about how it was nice in the fire. You know, it was nice and toasty. Everybody was warm. You don't say those kind of things. But we make jokes about them, and it seems like something that was literally killing us wasn't so bad. It was terrible. It was terrible. We were lost and undone. And if God would have called our roll call that moment, we would have missed it. That's how bad it was. Thank God we are where we are today, where we have an opportunity to thank Him for His goodness. And now He's given us a brand new start. We ought to be so grateful and so thoughtful of these things. So He's telling us, don't relate to their past wickedness and laughs and joke at the things they did. We ought to be ashamed of our past sins, reckoning our lives as having been plucked from the fire, giving esteem and thanks to our Redeemer and King, Yeshua Messiah. Our thoughts and speech must not be riddled with the past reckonings of gloating of a lawless life, but rather be esteeming the good way and walk in it with joy. So the energy and the excitement you put in your life that was going down the tube, because that's where we were going, down the tube. You gotta excel past that energy you're putting in for the fact that you're in life and it's life more abundantly. We ought to excel in that. We ought to be so happy. So if all you're talking about is the sad days you had and you're not talking about the happy, to get you some happy time. And you get happy time when you reflect on His goodness, when you reflect on the opportunity that He's given you. When you start thinking about His character, His method, what He did, the fact that Yeshua died for you, He rose again. We don't focus on just His death. We focus on His resurrection, the fact that He's alive. We don't focus that He had to bear a cross. We focus on the fact that he's a high priest that goes in the holy place for us. He goes and He makes intercession for us. That's what we focus on. We don't focus on the stuff that He had in His past. We focus on the good that brings joy to our life. Number 10, love does not rejoice over the unrighteousnesses, but rejoices in the truth. The first word that is translated as rejoice is the Greek word hario, Strong's 54:63, which means be glad, joyful, thrive, give one's greeting and approval. The Greek word for unrighteousness is adikia, which is Strong's G93, which means unrighteousness, iniquity, wrong, deeds, violating laws, injustice, and comes from the word that means to be without justice or penalty. This is a very clear and sobering warning of what love for Elohim is not. It does not rejoice over lawlessness. Love for Elohim does not rejoice in the nullification or disregard of the Torah of Elohim. This is very serious. If we say we love Him, yet we nullify and disregard His constitution, I'd put question mark on what kind of love we're talking about. Those who rejoice that the law has been done away with do not know what love is. People rejoice that the law has been done away with, yet the law of tithing somehow miraculously survived that. That's been the case that I've seen over the years. The law of tithing survived. The only one that survived the law was the law of tithing. The rest was done away with. And they certainly can never love Elohim if they have rejoiced over that. The second word that is translated as rejoice in the Greek is sukairio, which is Strong's 4796, which means rejoice with rejoicing. Rejoice with, rejoice together, share joy, congratulate. It comes from the previous word that we looked at for rejoice, but also has a preposition of soon, which is G4862, which denotes union or togetherness. The word that is translated as truth in the Greek is atheleteia, which is G22225, which means truth, truly, according to truth. The Master Yeshua Messiah tells us clearly in John 14:6 that he is the way, the truth, and the life, and to walk in the truth is to walk in him, and in him, in whom there is no spot or blemish. To walk in him is to walk according to the truth and in the purity of the truth, as we hear, guard, and do his commands. And in this we rejoice together as a bride that is being built up in the Master. In Proverbs 14, verse 9, it says, fools scoff at guilt, but among the straight there is a delight. The foolish who rejoice over lawlessness scoff at their guilt, while with the upright and straight, that is, the lovers of Elohim, there is true unity in rejoicing. Number 11, love covers all. The Greek word for cover here is stego, which is G4722, which means to cover closely, to bear up under, endure, put up with. In other words, as we walk in true love, we are to put up with each other. Put up with each other, which for many may be hard to do at times. This means we ought to make a concerted effort at not getting irritated with each other and be able to share openly with each other and have freedom to speak unto each other's lives without fear of being rejected or offended. This is one of the things that you got to learn being married. You got to put up with each other. The moment you can't put up with each other, you're going to be divorced. That simple. Because you're going to have to put up with your two different people. Your aim should be one aim, but you're still two different people. So you got to learn this very important thing that he writes to us. Love covers all. You got to learn to put up with each other. Because you're going to get irritated with each other. It's just the facts. And he knew that. But if you learn love covers all, there's something there that can help you with that. And ultimately, that's that word love. Amen? That's the agape. Number 12, love believes all. The Greek word here for believes is pistos, which is G4100, which is a verb that means to trust, to be committed to be trusted with, be persuaded, and place confidence in, to do. It comes from the root noun pistis, which is G4102, which means faith, faithfulness, pledge, conviction of truth, which in turn comes from the primary root verb pytho, which is G3982, which means to persuade, to put confidence in, to follow, have confidence, and rely on. When we look at these root terms, it is very clear, even in the Greek mindset, that to believe involves action and a confident response to the one you put your trust in and follow. And the last one is love expects all. I think it's the last one. It may be. Yeah, I think it is. Love expects all. The Greek word for expect is elpizo, which is strong 1679, which means to expect, to hope, to anticipate. And from a spiritual perspective, it can render the understanding of wait for salvation with joy and full confidence. In Book of Romans chapter 8, in verse 24 and 25, it says, "For in this expectation we were saved, but expectation that is seen is not expectation. For when anyone sees, does he expect it? And if we expect what we do not see, we eagerly wait for it with endurance." Hebrews 11, verse 1 says, "And belief is the substance of what is expected, the proof of what is not seen." True love for Elohim is expressed in the complete trust in Him by guarding to do all His commands with joy and sure expectation of our deliverance to be made complete when He comes for us, His set-apart bride. This complete expectation in regard to love is understood by staying steadfast in walking in the truth, knowing that the expectation of that which is to come will not disappoint, and therefore we expect all His words to be the truth, and actively choose to believe His words and guard to do what is commanded, holding firm to the assurance of the sure expectation we have in Messiah. Amen? What an amazing God. So we'll stop right there. And this week coming up, we're going to go into Numbers. It's going to be good. They're always good, but this is putting everything in the Constitution in practice. And we're going to have live examples of what happened in the children of Israel's life as they tried to forget the life they lived for over 400 years in the land of Mitzrayim in slavery, and now have to follow God's Constitution. We're going to see their successes. We're going to see their failures. We're going to see the disappointments. We're going to see all these things in the life of the children of Israel in the book of Numbers. So look forward to taking some time to go over that with you. Amen.